Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Opera opens its 65th season with Gaetano Donizetti's comic opera, The Daughter of the Regiment, starring Sarah Coburn as the orphan charge of the regiment, Marie, and Gregory Schmidt as her Tyrolean beloved, Tonio. In the story, Marie has been raised as the mascot of a group of French soldiers and has fallen for Tonio, a local peasant boy. But before true love ensues, the Marquis of Birkenfield claims to be a relative and brings Marie back to her chateau and tries to mold her into an aristocrat. Tonio joins the regiment, and together they march en masse to the chateau and give Marie a choice: a life of luxury and nobility, or true love as a soldier's wife. I'm joined today by artistic director and conductor for the production, Kostis Protopapas. He joins us to talk about the production, which opens tomorrow night at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, with additional performances next Friday and Sunday. Kostis Protopapas is my guest today. Kostis, so welcome back to Studio Tulsa. It's been a while. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me back, Rich. It's a pleasure.
The Tulsa Opera season opens with a great comic opera, and it's really a romp, isn't it? The Daughter of the Regiment.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's hysterical. This opera has been called, the role of the Daughter of the Regiment has been called Lucille Ball with High Notes by Beverly Sills, who was famous for her portrayal. So that kind of says it all.
And of course, in Sarah Coburn, you have a wonderful singer and a good actress. You know, I mean, when you think of Beverly Sills, you know, she pulled it off despite the fact she didn't look like this young girl for the most part in her career. But Sarah has that look.
Sarah does, and she is a tremendous actress, and she's so great in comedy. She's so funny. There's so much nuance, and she's really, really charismatic on the stage. But also, she brings to this role a very substantial voice. You know, sometimes in these roles, you hear, you know, very light voices, or the emphasis is on the athleticism and on the comedy. Sarah brings a different quality. Her sound is so much richer, so she's able to perform all those vocal acrobatics, but it's never without substance.
And that's sort of an unusual combination, because you usually have somebody like Beverly Sills who has the voice, but maybe not the look of this orphan girl, you know.
Yes.
And Sarah, you have both.
Yes, and we had a lot of fun at the theater the other day when everybody got into costume for the first time, because, you know, Sarah is a very, very beautiful woman, and she's, you know, so glamorous. And in the roles that she has done with us before, you know, like Lucia Lammermoor, that's a big, you know, big diva role. And then all of a sudden she showed up, and she was dressed like a soldier with her hair up and all that. And she was just absolutely charming. And she really relishes that opportunity to play the tomboy.
Now, is this her first Marie?
Yes, it is. It's a role that she's been wanting to do for a while, and this is the first time, so she's really excited.
Now, as a coach of singers, why is this the right time for Sarah to do that particular role?
Well,
not that you're her coach, but, you know.
Yeah, well, actually, she and I worked on the role quite a bit over the summer. Uh-huh. So I had the pleasure of, you know, working with her from when she was first learning it. I mean, her voice is and will be at its prime. It's at its prime right now, and it will be at its prime for a long time. So, and she has, what I love about the way she sings this music is that, again, she can sing the coloratura. She can sing the high notes. All the effervescence and all that, you know, spectacular quality about it is there, but also the voice is deeper. The voice has color, which is always something that I look for. I personally don't like the voices that are just so light, they feel almost disembodied. Her voice is one of those voices that has great sincerity at all times. You know, sometimes in opera, the bravura factor eclipses all else. Sometimes the listener concentrates more on the acrobatics or the athleticism, or sometimes all you hear is the technique. But what we try to do is where the real experience happens is when all that technique and bravura translates into an expression of the human soul. And you have to have a voice with capabilities. You have to have a voice with depth, and you have a voice that's genuinely beautiful, with a lot of layers, like Sarah's, to achieve that. And that's one of the greatest pleasures of working with her, is that there's nothing that's there just for the sake of showing off. It's there always in an extension of the character, and there's always it always speaks to you.
And while it is a comic opera, the role is actually quite meaty, because it's, you know, this is a young girl who's been the mascot of the regiment. She's torn away from the regiment. Her whole world is shifting upside down. While it is a funny role, it has to have that character.
Absolutely. There's always, I mean, this is genuinely a comedy. It's a French comedy at that, which makes it even more sort of in a lighter vein. It has spoken dialogue, for example. So in some ways, it's a little bit like American musical theater comedy in terms of its structure and the set numbers and the catchy tunes and the, you know, the toe-tapping nature of it. However, you know, it is by Gaetano Donizetti, who is a composer that went way beyond just the comedy. He was, Donizetti in a way was, from the three great bel canto composers, was the one that paved the road to Verdi the most. For example, you can see the music moving into this more romantic direction. Like the first act finale is always in Donizetti, that finale that Verdi later developed into that great concertato thing that we get in Traviata or in Othello. But it's already there in Daughter of the Regiment and the Elixir of Love, where this, the music moves to a different sphere. It's, everything stands still. Like, for example, his great sextet in Lucia di Lammermoor. It's the same composer. So the composer doesn't shed his gravitas or his ability to express emotion because he is writing a comedy. And that obviously plays into the story. And there's some moments, and we've been discussing this a lot in rehearsal, because there's one point where the music all of a sudden becomes very serious, and it's a completely different expression than what has come before. And we were talking with the artist and with the director about this, and I see it as, you know, Donizetti's moment of moving the music forward into more into the romantic times. So, and that obviously plays into the story, because Marie, the story is, if you look at the more serious aspect of it, it's a story about a passage from childhood into adulthood, both for Marie and for Tonio. In Tonio's case, obviously everybody knows the aria with the nine high C's, which is Tonio the boy, you know, sings the nine high C's and brings the house down. It's just innocence and exuberance and youthful energy and all that. In the second act, he has a much more contemplative number, a romance that is slow. It's very, very bel canto. It's almost Bellinian in the way that the line works. And to top it, has a high C sharp.
And of course, we talked about Sarah Coburn doing Marie, but Gregory Schmidt as Tonio. This is not for the faint of heart for any tenor, because
no.
Really, one of your, you know, first act, nine high C's, and not to mention, it's a long aria, and you've been singing high B flats there in the first part of the aria as well.
Yes. Greg, again, is exactly the voice that I like in that sort of role. Again, as I said before about Sarah, sometimes because this aria has so many challenges up high, sometimes you hear this repertoire sung by tenors that have a great top and not much else. Greg's voice also has that bel canto depth that I'm looking for, and you'll see that in the more melodic sections. You'll see that in the aria in the second act. And I've done this, actually, this opera with Greg before, and so I know it's guaranteed, and it's Greg is at the top of his game, and this is exactly what he does.
Your point about this aria, everybody thinks of the nine high C's, and that's how this Mes Amis is known.
Exactly.
But the first half of the aria, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Verdi in a way, you know, early Verdi, you know, and,
yes.
And it's up and down his range.
Yes,
as exactly. Well as these high B flats, and then all of a sudden he's popping out C's.
Exactly. And as it is, you know, the essence of bel canto is to explore the voice throughout its registers. I mean, yes, sort of the sound bite is always the high note. But what the bel canto composers did, the way they wrote music and the way vocal technique was developed, is to create smooth transitions all the way from the bottom to the top of the range. And the bel canto composers explore that by, they don't just write high notes, they also write meaty melodic passages in the middle of the voice that it really takes a great technician and a great artist to be able to bring together with the high notes, because, you know, transitioning, being able to sing those fuller melodic passages in the middle, and then 5 minutes later popping out the nine high C's, that's really the great feat of technique. And of course, the artistry is in bringing that all together into an experience that the audience can relate to, not just a circus act.
Well, I think we'd be doing our listeners a disservice if we didn't hear the soundbite, as you termed it.
Exactly.
Let's hear a portion of Mes Amis. This is actually sung by Gregory Schmidt, who will be portraying Tonio in Tulsa Opera's production of Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment, which opens this weekend and continues next weekend at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Here's Gregory Schmidt singing some of those high C's. That's Gregory Schmidt, the tenor for Tulsa Opera's production of Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment, singing the very famous aria Mes Amis with the great High Seas. My guest today is Kostis Protopapas, who's artistic director of Tulsa Opera and conducting this production as well, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Tell us about the look of this particular production. Again, this is a comic opera. It was first produced in 1840. There's a great ending song that it's kind of like a Broadway show in the sense that there's a big patriotic, you know, Salut de France at the end. I think if people go with that sort of idea of a 19th century, somewhat of a Broadway show,
exactly,
this is how to approach this. Now, do you have that sort of spectacular look to the production?
Yes, we do. This is a, first of all, it's a traditional production, which means that it is set in the time period it's supposed to be set in. And it has a beautiful, whimsical set. There's a lot of color on the stage. Well, the first act, the setting is the Tyrolean
countryside.
So, and then there's a lot of colors. The soldier costumes that dominate, obviously, the first act are very colorful, perhaps more colorful than they would have been in real life with the, this bright blue pants and orange and red coats that the regiment wears. And in the second act, it takes place in the chateau of the Marquis de Benkerville. So you have that, 19th century ornate style. And then there you have the opportunity to dress your soprano in a nicer dress than just have her dressed as a soldier. So there's a lot of color on the stage. And the staging also brings that musical theater, Broadway sort of energy to the stage. Our director, Tara Faircloth, directed The Barber of Seville last year, and we had a big success with that because the audiences really loved the energy on the stage. This is not a stand-and-sing production. It's very kinetic.
I would assume lots of physical comedy. You know, Barber of Seville is known for having lots of physical comedy.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's exactly in the same vein as our Barber of Seville was last year. There's a lot of physical comedy. Rarely does anybody stand still, except, of course, in the moments where the music calls for it. But there's a dance element to it. You know, the regiment always moves in a sort of choreographed way that I think we'll get some chuckles because it's, you know, it's very reminiscent of Broadway. In rehearsals, we get a lot of laughs because, you know, Tara will say, now jazz hands. Of course, we don't really exactly do that in the production, but it was always something, you know, we're it always seems to be going that direction and then it just stops right short of being, you know, exactly that. But it is, in essence, it's very similar to American musical theater because it has set numbers and spoken dialogue. And one way in which we bring it even one step closer to the audience, especially audience members that are not going to the opera all the time, is we are doing the dialogue in English. Mm. The singing is in French, but the dialogue is in English. I felt that audiences want to be able to relate to the performers as closely and as directly as possible. When the language is part of the fabric of the music, obviously you preserve the original language because if you translate the singing, it gives you a completely different experience. This music was written to be sung in French, so the melodic nature of the language itself is written in. So you have to keep that in. And then, of course, we have the surtitles so people can read. You know, sometimes people, even people who don't go to the opera much, they say, well, I don't really need the surtitles. The music kind of tells the story. But if you want to know what they're saying, it's up there. On the dialogue, however, especially since it's comedy, you want the dialogue to be timed with the joke just right. So instead of having a middleman there in the surtitles trying to translate the joke and try to make sure we press the button for the surtitle just at the right time, we decided to do the dialogue in English. And I, in my opinion, the more we rehearsed, it came to me that, you know, having the dialogue in English sort of provides that one transition step into this sung French that I think a lot of people following the singing in the foreign language is a little bit of a leap for some people. Now we have that little intermediate step of the dialogue in English that I think will bring people closer.
Well, I think by hearing the dialogue in English, you sort of have this point of connection. So when you start singing in French and you're seeing the surtitles all of a sudden, then it's making more sense.
Yeah, exactly. This the relationship between the performers and the audience builds and tightens thanks to the spoken dialogue.
Of course, that's also dependent on a translation that sort of captures the essence of the original. I assume you have that.
Yes.
You know,
well, yes, we do. I mean, the translation, when you do a translation, and especially when you're playing comedy for a modern audience, unless you're trying to make a point of having a period performance or have a completely stylized performance, you have to adapt your dialogue a little bit so that it's a little bit closer to contemporary life, so people will get the joke. So we have done some of that, And also, we have shortened the dialogue a lot. If you look at the original score, there's pages and pages and pages of dialogue, which, you know, we're not doing. I mean, it is opera. People come for the singing.
Well, tell us a little bit about the cast. We've talked about Sarah Coburn. We talked about Gregory Schmidt, who, again, as you mentioned, has these, the great high register, but he's got a complete register, and he, you know, great dramatic voice as well. Tell us about the rest of the cast.
Well, the third person in the main trio is Peter Strummer, who plays Sergeant Silpice. Sergeant is sort of the father figure of the whole regiment. And
father
he is,
figure to Marie as well.
Obviously the father figure to Marie as well. And it's a great comic bass baritone role, and Peter has done it before. Obviously, those who come to Tulsa Opera know that Peter Strummer is one of the best comic bass baritones around, and he sings nationally, internationally, precisely this kind of repertoire. He has a great sense for comedy, for comedic timing, for lines. He has contributed a lot to this production in terms of his experience of what works and what doesn't. And he is really terrific foil for the love duo of the tenor and soprano. And of course, he has a great, powerful voice. And he's really, he's iconic. It's, but for me, now that I've worked with him for 2 weeks, it's impossible to think of Silpice without thinking of Peter. And then we have in the role of the Marquise de Birkenfield, who is in some ways the most touching of all the characters because of, it's the character of this, you know, the woman who's a little bit older and she's accustomed to things being a certain way and the world is challenging that notion. And I think as audience members, we really feel for her because she's is really trying to do good and it's not really working out the way she has it planned.
And when you first meet her, you know, she's kind of, she has the greatest character arc of change in the
exactly.
opera.
Exactly. And she
has, when we meet her, she's kind of an old biddy.
Yeah, she is. But she's also harried. You know, she's been chased out of her home from the Napoleonic army and she's preserves that sense of dignity while being pursued, and she's a great, delightful comic character that in the second act becomes so vulnerable, and so there is obviously, as always, a revelation, as there always is in bel canto operas, and that's also another, that's the turning point that I was talking about before, also in the music, that everything becomes really so human, and all these characters take this other dimension. So she's in a way the most complete character. So in that role, we have in her Tulsa Opera debut, Dorothy Byrne, who has made a big career in the United States singing precisely those characters' roles. She has done a lot of opera. She has done a lot of musical theater. She has done premieres. And she's a terrific singing actress. So again, she knows how to play this character, has played it before with great success. And what is really a cause for celebration is that after Dot arrived to start rehearsal, she told us that this is actually her final production. She's retiring after
wow.
this. So I'm so thrilled that we actually got Dot before she retires because I've known her for a long time and I've always wanted to get her here. And this is, she's so perfect in this role and so moving and so human and so funny. This is a great cast all the way around.
Now, throughout our conversation, you've talked about the rehearsal process. And I would think for a comedy, that rehearsal process is even perhaps a little more than it usually is. When you have a dramatic role, it's about, you know, the drama, and everybody yeah. sort of knows. The whole thing about comedies, you never know how it's going to play.
Oh, exactly.
Unless you see it time and time again, and you go, oh, this is going to work.
Yes, and I think it is staging and rehearsing comedy is more complicated, and it can be exhausting. We've had long rehearsals, and it's really hard work. And comedy to work, it has to be right for everybody who is involved. So there's a lot of discussion and often a lot of disagreement about what works and what doesn't. The process has been a lot of fun. And also, Tara, as I said before, likes things to move. And so she doesn't come from the standpoint of making it easy for the singers. I mean, she understands singing because she was a singer herself. So singing comes first, and we'll make sure that the show is staged in such a way that the voices will perform optimally and will be heard and all that. But she will always add that extra little bit of detail that then you have to work in. And, you know, so it's been a long and hard rehearsal process. Everybody's tired.
Has the approach been sort of that classic screwball comedy in many ways? You know how, you know, in the 1930s, the screwball comedies, everybody's always moving. Everybody's opening doors, everybody's closing doors, running
through
doors.
Maybe not that level of frantic uh-huh. movement. I think the idea is there, but it's just brought down to the level of, it has more of a contemporary sensibility. You don't get the sense that you're watching a period piece in that sense, neither in the sense of the period of the piece that is written or in the sense of, screwball comedy or, Lucy and Ricky. Or it's very much, all those sensibilities are there and are informing the staging, but the feel of it is very, very contemporary. It's something that people that watch TV comedy on, contemporary comedy on TV will relate to.
Now, of course, with the regiment, that means a chorus.
Of course.
And your male chorus, actually, for the most part. But and is this a good choral opera?
Yes. Well, it is. It's much harder than it appears, because by the time it's on its feet, the tunes seem fairly simple, but there's a lot of French language in it. And there is a lot of, it takes a lot to prepare this chorus, and my guys have done a really great job in stepping it up, learning all that French. I mean, there's French patter for the chorus that is built in, actually. It's in the transition between the first and the second part of the aria of the Nine High Seas. There's this fiendishly difficult part that lasts about 30 seconds, and it's really difficult for the chorus because they have to sing patter together in harmony in French.
Yeah, with all those nasalization
pronunciations.
Yeah.
So we spent several evenings working on that. And I really appreciate that the guys came along and that they are not holding it against me that I insisted on the things that I insisted. But then it's also on its feet. And it's done with movement and blocking and all that. So it's the final product. It's one of those things that seems simple, but behind it, it takes a lot of work. They have two big show numbers, the Rataplan chorus and another chorus that comes before that. They have a lot of entrances rushing in and singing big tunes with their guns pointed forward and things. It's a great show for the chorus. It's sort of, again, it feels like more of a Broadway chorus than anything else.
My guest today is Kostis Protopapas, artistic director and conductor for Tulsa Opera's opening production of the season, Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment, starring Sarah Coburn and Gregory Schmidt, which will be performed tomorrow night and again next Friday and Sunday at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. And this is the first production. And when we look at the season, we always know that the middle opera of the Tulsa Opera is always going to be something different, usually a seldom performed opera or something just off the beaten operatic repertoire path. This year's is goes in a different direction. We expect to see something, European maybe, or something that doesn't get produced that much. This year, it's an American, what was actually more of a musical at one point, Most Happy Fella by Frank Lesser.
That's correct.
Was an interesting choice.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you how it came about. So you say that our middle opera is usually the unusual piece. One direction that I have taken, and I think I'm going to continue on for some time, is I would like to include an American work in each Tulsa Opera season. That's for a number of reasons. First of all, when it comes to American opera, we're an American opera company. We have the responsibility towards the art form to perform American works, of which there are many and there are great. A lot of people think that the repertoire of opera stopped with Puccini. In other words, that opera is a museum art form. It's not at all. Operas are being written all the time, and some of them are really fantastic. I think we showed that last year with Dead Man Walking. An opera written in 2000 or based on a true story from American contemporary life. And it was a big, big hit. I mean, I've never seen audiences so moved by anything. So it's part of our mission to present these contemporary American works. Another reason to do American works is the language and it's the cultural context. There is a portion of our, our loyal audience that knows the Verdi, the Puccinis, the Rossinis, the Donizettis, and all that. They already have a feel and they understand this repertoire and they relate to. We need to also gain a new audience, which consists of people that don't necessarily automatically connect with that late 19th century European sensibility. Culture has changed. Education has changed. I think a lot of our culture currently is more concerned with the here and now. And I think in order to gain new audiences, we have to show that opera has something to say about contemporary America. So in that sense, I would like to have an American piece on the schedule every year. This year, we're doing a piece that is, you know, some people call a musical. It's been called the most operatic work written for Broadway. And Frank Lesser himself, when it was first produced, wanted to bill it as an opera. But it was produced on Broadway, and the producer said, if we build it as an opera, we won't sell any tickets. So they built it as musical theater. And it is very operatic in a sense. First of all, the vocal requirements for it. If you do some research, you see that it's not produced very often, and it hasn't been produced on Broadway in a long time because it does really require opera singers. The role of Tony, the aging Italian vineyard owner in Napa Valley, who falls in love with a young waitress, that role of Tony is a big role that requires a Rigoletto-grade baritone. There's some really big singing, especially in the second act, supported by a really big orchestra. So it was premiered by Robert Weed, who was on the roster of the Metropolitan Opera at the time. He was a great Amonasro and did other Verdi roles at the Met. And once the lead role is a Verdi baritone, you can pretty much make the argument that the piece is an opera as much as it is a Broadway musical. The other reason why I liked this piece is because it's true composed. The music rarely stops. Sometimes, with musicals, there's a lot of dialogue, very little music. This one is not so. There's very little dialogue, and the little bit that happens is usually over underscoring. So the music is always flowing. It is much richer orchestration than what you usually get in musicals, bigger orchestra. And I think it has the dramatic arc of an opera. It's a very, very complete work that I think will be the musical value is very high, and it's something that even the most dedicated opera fans will find that it will meet their expectations for the musical values and for the singing requirements of it.
All right, well, we'll look forward to that later this year, but right now it's Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment. Good seats remain available through this weekend and next weekend at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Kostis, a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for
having me back.
Tulsa Opera Artistic Director Kostis Protopapas speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Tulsa Opera opens its season with Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment Saturday night, again next Friday and Sunday at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. For ticket information, visit TulsaOpera.com or call 918-587-4811. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.